Good evening, this is John St. Germain, voice of the Crystal Silence League. Welcome you to Crystal Silence League Radio Hour, brought to you by Lucky Mojo Curio Company and LMC Radio Network. Tonight we ask the question, are you happy? And then we try to find answers. Coming up tonight we have special guest, me. And if you have phone calls, of course we are taking phone calls. We have a call-in line for you. You can always call 657-383-0525 and press 1. When you press 1, a magic hand raises, and I will bring you on the air and tell us your secrets to happiness. We're going to talk about spiritual secrets of happiness, how you can be more happy, attract happiness in your life, and do the things that will make you happy. We would love to hear from you. And if you're not happy, why? Again, you can call our show tonight. You call 657-383-0525, press 1, and ask me, and just ask us, why are you not happy? And maybe we can arrive at some answers. Enjoy this little brief musical break. We are the Crystal Silence League Hour. Take a little moment, grab your crystal balls, and come back in just about 1 minute. And we're back. Did you miss me? This is the Crystal Silence League Radio Hour, and as some of you know, and many of you may not, the Crystal Silence League was originally formed in 1917 by Mr. Claude Alexander Conlon, who retired from a tremendously successful career as a vaudeville mind reader to form the Crystal Silence League, and he also had a publishing house that published New Thought literature. And the idea of the Crystal Silence League was to distribute positive affirmations and prayers to those in need of such. And when he passed into the silence in 1958, of course, the Crystal Silence League went with him until it was revived in cybernetic form by adepts of the Missionary Independent Spiritual Church a few years ago. And you can find us online at www.crystalsilenceleague.org, where you can post prayer petitions. And prayer is always free at the Crystal Silence League, so feel free to post your prayer petitions there. And we get, and I'm not exaggerating, hundreds of prayers posted there daily. And it is the custom, my custom, to read these some of these prayers, just a small percentage of them, out loud on the air at the beginning of every show. And I don't identify these by name, only by prayer ID number and initials. So please join me, if you will, in sending positive thoughts and affirmations to the following people. And we'll just read just a few of these for the next few minutes. This is prayer ID number 41843, UM, who prays for protection from danger for her and her children. Let no evil come up against herself or her children and protect her and her family from any evil people who may be entering their lives. Prayer ID number 41842 AL, who hopes that her husband's mother will help them in their marriage. And prayer ID number 41841 LV, who prays that her husband will be happy in his job. And prayer ID number 41840 JI, who prays for a relief from the harassment of people in her life. So there's some people harassing her. She prays for relief from that. And we have prayer ID number 41839 LF, prays to keep her little family together and been blessed with a new daughter, but is fearful about her family staying together. Prayer ID number 41838 CC, prays for a financial blessing so that he or she may keep their house. We also have prayer ID number 41835 AL. Prays also for blessings that she may win enough money for scratch off to buy a home and fix it up with various miscellaneous needs. Prayer ID number 41834 ER needs harmony in the workplace. And prayer ID number 41833 MS prays for her car, especially the transmission and electrical system will hold up until she can afford a new car. Prayer ID number 41832 AA needs a safe, steady, comfortable private room to his or herself. And prayer ID number 41831, please pray that the doctor is able to find out everything that's wrong with her, especially with her back. And prayer ID number 41829 JC prays for fertility, that she can conceive, carry, and deliver a healthy baby. And prayer ID number 41828 EB needs $50 to pay the sheriff, or his or her truck will be confiscated. And prayer ID number 41827 BP also needs finances, needs a new job and a new career so that he or she may quit this stressful job that they're in. And we have a specific request. A prayer ID number 41825 needs a job that pays $700 a week. Prayer ID number 41824 GM needs to find the right person for them, or the love may develop, or has they already met them. Basically, I believe this person needs to find the right person that will love them and that they can be loved by. Prayer ID number 41823 GT needs financial increase. And prayer ID number 41820 DB needs successful outcome from a work situation. And prayer ID number 41817 AGR needs supportive, loving energies be sent for healing, safety, recovery, and a happy home. Prayer ID number 41815 BB needs healing in the family. And prayer ID number 41813 KB needs prayer and support in a court case, and that the judge delivers justice in this case. And finally, prayer ID number 41810 MP needs help with a relationship, that love and reconciliation occurs between her and the one she loves. And so may these prayers be answered. And let's also take a minute now for a silence for all those who need prayer and positive affirmation. And amen. And welcome back. Our crystal of the week, our stone of the week, is spessartine, which is a very lovely stone. It's a form of garnet. It's a lesser known form of garnet. And it's a rare variety of garnet. And it's especially appropriate or apropos to our topic tonight, which is happiness. because it comes in a number of shades ranging from yellow through red, and most of its qualities involve energizing, vibrating at a higher rate of energy, and raising spirits. It's physically healing to moods. It's an antidepressant, and it suppresses depression and nightmares. It fortifies the heart. It can be used to initiate analytical processes and mental processes. It frees you from pre-existing prejudices and pre-existing notions, and helps you with the creative process and exploring new realms of thought. It can help you become more aware of your natural instincts, your natural feelings, and it's been used in helping people with compulsive overeating and compulsive sex, and restoring the natural appetites. Because sometimes we do emotional eating and emotional acting out, and this helps you suppress the emotional urges and go back to your natural urges. The energy of the yellower and orange forms of spessartine can promote feelings of happiness from within, not external, but from within, and it can help you get more fulfillment out of your activities. It can help you become more outstanding. It helps you naturally radiate your own sense of joie de vivre. You just radiate a more positive energy. It comes in many colors. Dark gold can help you with success and enthusiasm and power. The orange spessartine can help you with joy and friendship, pleasure, group activities, family, and home. Scarlet spessartine helps you with strength and vitality, both physical and spiritual. And they can be made into amulets that will help protect you from harm. They give you courage, and they improve your self-reliance. Red spessartine helps raise your enthusiasm, your passion, your energy, and help vitalize your life force. So that's our crystal of the week, spessartine. Our topic tonight, happiness. Are you happy? And I'm going to tell you that many people, when I ask that question, they don't know how to answer it. They hedge and they say, well, you know, more or less, or I'm fairly happy, or I'm kind of happy, or most of the time, or sometimes, or you know, what is, or you know, what is happiness? I have friends from Russia that go, well, what's happy? What is happy, my friend? You know, what is? I'm alive. I'm living. I'm still alive. So I'm not sure that a lot of people don't even really know what happy is. And one of the conclusions at which I've arrived is that for a lot of people, happy means that I ache a little less today than I did yesterday. It's a relative term. It's on a scale that they compare their emotional state today to yesterday. And if you ache a little bit less than you did yesterday, then, hey, that's happiness. Or you hold out hope that tomorrow will be a better day than today, then that might be a little bit better. That's happiness. And I think that's kind of that makes me unhappy. It makes me sad to think of that. That a person's definition of happiness is that their pain level has gone down a little. Emotional, spiritual pain has gone down a little. And so, hey, that's my definition of happiness. Freedom from stress, or a reduction in stress. And I think we can do a little better than that. It's this hope thing. You know, I hope things will get better. And that just makes me want to ramble on about my theory about Pandora's box. You know the story of Pandora's box? This is a Greek myth. It's a Greek story. There was a woman named Pandora. And for some reason or other, the gods gave her a box. And they said, Pandora, don't open this box because it's got terrible things in it. And so naturally, Pandora, being human, decides, well, maybe I can just open this box just a little bit, and she does, and all the evils of the world came out. The reason we're unhappy is because of a Pandora's box being opened, according to this Greek myth. All the evils, sickness, misery, greed, fear, anger, hate, all these monsters came crawling out of that box and were released upon mankind. But when she slammed the lid shut, the very last thing that couldn't get out was hope. And so mankind has hope left. Everything else got out. And that's why we have hope that is presumably, and this is how most people interpret this myth, that hope protects us or gives us fortification against all these other evils. This is how most people interpret that. I'm going to tell you, I had an epiphany about this myth, though. I was thinking about it one time and thinking about my personal experience, and I thought, why would the gods put hope in with all these other monsters, greed, anger, envy, all these horrors, fear, hate, unless it was appropriate? That hope was a monster just like the rest of them. That hope was something that created misery too, in a very subtle way. Maybe hope was the worst of the monsters. Maybe hope was the very worst, and that's why it's the one that was coming out last. It was the monster that the other ones were running away from. That's why they were fleeing the box screaming, get us out of here. We're trapped in here with hope. It's the worst of us. And when she slammed the lid shut, it was with a sigh of relief. Hope didn't get out. It's the worst thing to ever happen to humankind, because there's nothing more miserable than having your hopes dashed. There's nothing more miserable than living on hope. There's nothing more miserable than having hope, and that hope is never fulfilled. Hope is the worst of them. So let's not even talk about hope making us happy. Let's not even talk about hope. Don't, you know what it says above Dante's Inferno? You know Dante's Inferno? Abandon hope, all ye who enter here. Abandon hope. Abandon hope. And that's, to my mind, is a very good motto. First of all, abandon hope. If you want to be happy, abandon hope. Because if you're hoping, you're not acting. If you're hoping, that's, put this down, rule number one. If you're hoping, you're not acting. Hope is the worst thing that was in Pandora's box. The other monsters were afraid of it. This is my personal discovery. This is St. Germain's take on Pandora's box. This is why I'm John St. Germain and nobody else is. People thought that myth meant that hope was a good thing. No, I'm telling you that hope was the worst of the Pandora's box monsters. I may be the first person to ever discover this, so take it from me. Abandon hope. That's a good thing. So, you may think, oh my God, that's depressing. No, it's not. No, it's not. Hope, all hope will do is raise your hopes, and you won't act. No hopes. No hopes. Don't hope. Plan. So let's talk about happiness. First of all, I'm going to tell you ways to be unhappy. These are surefire ways to be unhappy. Try to please other people. Try to please other people. That'll make you unhappy. Especially if you try to please everybody. Surefire way to be unhappy, try to please everybody. Try to be perfect. Try to be perfect in everything you do. Strive for perfection. You're going to be miserable. There's nobody more miserable in this world than perfectionists. Holding on to things. Holding on to things. Physical or emotional. The more you try to hold on to things, the more you're going to be unhappy. And I'm not just talking about things like holding on to guilt, holding on to shame, holding on to anger, holding on to grief, but trying to hold on to physical things. You buy a new car, you try to keep that car new, you try to keep it running perfectly, you're going to be unhappy. Try to hold on to other people, you're going to be unhappy. Denial. Denial is a surefire way to be unhappy. And, I mean, denying reality. People deny that they're getting old. People deny that other people are getting old. People deny that there's sickness. People deny that there's death. People think that you shouldn't die. People buy a dog, and they want the dog to live forever. The dog dies, and they go, oh, my God, my dog died. Well, dogs live from 7 to 14 years. When you buy a dog, the dog's going to die. That's part of the deal. And so let the dog go. Resistance. When you resist things, there's going to be stress, and it's going to make you unhappy. So know what to resist and what not to, but resistance. Don't resist. And I don't mean give up. I don't mean give up, but don't resist. Resistance will make you unhappy. So what I mean by resistance is that the world is a certain way. Do you think you can change the world? Do you? Do you? Okay. You're setting yourself up for unhappiness. Do you think you can change the world? Do you? And then there's resentment. Surefire way of unhappiness. Resentment is a sense of injustice. Resentment is when you feel you've been treated unjustly and you resent it. If you feel you've been treated unjustly, don't resent it. Don't resent it. Find a way to get out from under it. I can tell you stories about the IRS, what the IRS does to people who are self-employed, and I could sit here and go, the IRS, but I don't. I've found ways to work around it. Resentment doesn't do anything except make you unhappy. These are the 7 rules to be unhappy. I can give you a lot more. I can give you a lot more, but these are just ways to be unhappy, and these are the common ways to be unhappy. So turn these around. Surefire ways to be happy. Please yourself. Please yourself. Don't try to be perfect. Just try to be the best that you can be. Learn to let go. Learn to let go. Accept. Accept the way things are. Don't resist. Be flexible. Learn to be flexible. And don't resent things. Let them go. Let it go. Move past it. Move past it. And these are rules that will help you be happy. Now, none of this is easy. I'm not telling you this is easy, because to do any of these, you've got to be able to find good in the world. And the world is not good or bad. The world is a certain way. And the last time we were on the show, I told you some stories about my grandfather. And my grandfather taught me 2 things that became core philosophy, and I learned these before I was in school, and I didn't understand them until I was an adult. But I have studied Buddhism for 30 years, and I've studied Buddhism intently, and I've studied religions of the world, and I can talk theology to you until your eyes glass over. And believe me, I can talk advanced Buddhism to you until not only will your eyes glass over, but when you die and reincarnate, your reincarnation's eyes will glass over. But the 2 things that became my core philosophy I learned from my grandfather, who was a Christian man, and probably the only Christian I've ever met. A lot of people say they're Christian, but my grandfather's probably the only Christian I've ever met. He knew Jesus. He knew Jesus like he sat on the front porch with him and shared iced tea with him. If you ask my grandfather to describe Jesus Christ, he could tell you what kind of man he was. Not as a theory, but he could tell you what kind of person, what kind of man Jesus was. He knew Jesus, and he lived his life with that knowledge. And I told this very briefly last week, but when I was a very young child. Now, when I was a kid, when you hurt yourself, you didn't get, you know, now parents grab your kid if you have a splinter in your finger and they take you to the walk-in clinic. When I was a kid, before your parents would take you to the emergency room, you had to have a bone sticking out of your leg. And I'm not exaggerating too much. If you had a sprained ankle or a green stick fracture, more likely than not, they would fix it at home. And when, you know, my brother once walked through a plate glass door, and my mom and dad looked at he gashed his arm open, and he was dripping blood, and they had a discussion whether or not to take him to the emergency room. And I remember my dad looking at it, my mom looking at it, and they looked at each other, and they said, yeah, we should probably take him. And it took, I think, 6 stitches to close it. But they had a discussion about it. They didn't just go, oh, my God, let's take him to the hospital, you know, like parents do now if you have a, you know, just a tiny scratch. So I was walking, I was playing in a vacant lot across the street, and I stepped on a broken Coke bottle, and it went through the the part of my foot that's right below your first two toes, big toe and second toe, it just popped through that area of skin. And being really young, I went howling, ah, and my grandfather ran over and he picked me up and he took me home and goes, what is it? And he sprayed this stuff called Bactine. Now, I don't know if you'll have to remember this stuff, but I think it was basically iodine and alcohol mixed together. And it's sprayed. You just squeeze the bottle, go pfft, and spray. And it stung like the devil. It was like being stung by a bee. And I went, ah, and then he wrapped it in his handkerchief. And I was still crying. He goes, what are you crying about, Johnny? I said, well, it hurts. And he goes, but it's okay now. You know, it's okay. I go, but it hurts. And he said, listen, he said, it's over now. He said, and it didn't kill you, so you're okay. And he said, and I started to calm down. And he said, I want you to remember something. Remember this. He said, life is a big thing. Pain is a small thing. As long as you're still alive, you're going to be okay. And he lived that to his dying day. When he was in the hospital, he was dying of cancer. And he was dying of cancer, and he refused to have pain medicine. He wouldn't take pain medicine. Because he said he wanted to meet Jesus with a clear head. They gave it to him once, and he said, I don't want it anymore. He said, I want to meet Jesus with a clear head. So he died of cancer with no pain medicine. I want you to think about that. And all the people in the hospital were really impressed with that. They said that's the only person they've ever known who refused pain meds. And that was the way my grandfather was. And the other thing that I learned from him that was very important was my dad was a very sad man, and I found out why later on when I learned more about his family. But he was talking about how bad the world was, how hard the world was. My grandfather said, well, Ernie, the world, he said, there's a lot going on in the world. He said, but you know, the world's okay. It's people that usually mess things up. And he said, and you have to get to know them, and once you get to know them, you see why they mess things up. And so here's another rule of happiness for you. Understand why people do the things they do. And that sense of injustice, that resentment, and that sense of resistance will probably lessen significantly. If you understand why people do the things they do, you're not going to hold on to it as much. If you're driving home from traffic and somebody blows their horn at you and they go, F you, they're not blowing their horn at you. If you can understand that they must have had a really bad day, they're not mad at you, and you understand that if you get mad at them. You're not mad at some guy blowing his... You don't even know this guy. You're not mad at him. You're mad at your boss yelled at you, you know, or your love life sucks or something like that. And so understand why you're mad. Understand why you're unhappy. And don't accept it. Don't accept it. Part of acceptance, too, is don't accept it. Understand it. So let's talk about other ways to be happy. There's a thing called cathexis. You may have heard of catharsis. Catharsis means you release emotion. There used to be a thing when I was younger called primal scream therapy. A bunch of people got in a room, and the therapist said, think about things that make you mad. Now go, ah, and you'd scream, ah, 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 ah. And there was a thing called est, ah, and you'd scream, and this was a catharsis. Other ways of catharsis are sporting events where people scream for their teams, and war, of course, and fighting, and sex. Sex is cathartic if it's good. And, you pour out. Now, cathexis, though, is a term I want to lay on you. Cathexis is a term that means focusing your attention. Focusing your attention on exclusively on something. Not always in a good way, but we're going to talk about it in a good way. Cathexis means that you have focused all of your attention and energy on something, and it comes from Freudian psychology. I'll tell you that. And there's a mental and physical cathexis. Let's talk about body cathexis first. The idea of body cathexis is when you invest a lot of your mental, emotional energy in your own body. That's, for instance, when you get obsessed with weight management or clothing choices, and you place your energy into that, and that's where your happiness lies. Now, studies show that people are more satisfied with their hair and eyes than their waists, for instance. Now, consumers, and this is an interesting study, consumers who were more satisfied with their bodies were more frequent users of hair conditioner, blow dryers, cologne, facial bronze, tooth polish, and soaps. And that's an example of body cathexis. You take care of your body, you're cathexing with your body. Now, low body cathexis is linked to low self-esteem. Now, there's another type of cathexis, which is mental or emotional cathexis, and that's really what we want to talk about now. This is when it's an investment in Freudian terms of libido. You put a lot of your psychosexual energies into activities, and you can experience cathexis with anything. Gardening, playing piano, sculpting, art. Now, I'm not going to put a whole lot of psychological baggage on this, but people who are experiencing cathexis with an activity experience a state of selflessness. They're totally at one with the activity, and they describe their state of mind as happy. So if you are experiencing cathexis with gardening or art, painting, writing, you're experiencing happiness. So if you find an activity that totally absorbs you, not obsession, we're not talking about obsession. Usually obsessive compulsive behavior is not happy. But an activity that happily absorbs you just makes you happy. So the first thing I always advise people, you know, they say, well, I just want to be happy. Well, do things that make you happy. Fill your day with things that make you happy. Make a list of things that make you happy. So here are some ways to do that. If you can't find time a day, imagine, visualize happiness. Any activity, if you do it over and over again, will change your brain chemistry. Speaking of brain chemistry, let me talk about this a minute. We're talking about normal person unhappiness, and I hate to use that word, but chemical imbalances such as clinical depression, dysthymia, these have to be treated professionally. And while I sympathize with people who say that medicines are overprescribed, antidepressants are overprescribed, I sympathize with that. There are chemical imbalances that must be treated psychiatrically. And I don't think that you can willpower yourself through these. If there is a this general unhappiness, though, if you just find yourself down in the dumps, you don't need to be popping pills, I don't think. I'm talking about improving the quality of your life. I'm not talking about curing a psychiatric condition. I just want to get that clear right now. So this is basically how to experience more happiness. I just want to tell you, this program is not designed to treat psychiatric conditions. I just want to get that clear right now. But we know that any activity at all, good or bad, if you do it again and again and again, it'll change the structure of your brain. But also, visualizing an activity again and again and again will change your brain map. We know meditation does. There have been brain maps of monks who meditate, and their brain is different from quote-unquote normal people who don't meditate. So activity has an effect on your neurological structure. You can even imagine it. So even imagining yourself doing happy things will have an impact on your mental state. Not as great an impact as actually doing it, unless you're really, really good at imagining it. So If you practice the piano and that makes you happy, you can imagine practicing the piano and it will make you happy, but to a lesser degree. It will also improve your piano skills. I know this as a fact. I often, before I go to sleep at night, will practice some piano piece I'm working on, and the next day when I sit down and play it, I got better at it. I'm not very good at piano playing. I'd probably get better at it if I visualize it more, but hey, so every day, make a point of visualizing yourself happy. Some situation that makes you happy, if it's a memory from your childhood, a peak experience of some kind, make a point of it. And then when you are happy, when you're in a situation that makes you happy, be very mindful of how you feel, your body. How does your body feel? Memorize it. Make a memory of how you feel when you're happy. And then when you need a boost, take a moment and remember that feeling. Access that memory. How did I feel when I was happy? And sometimes that's going to be hard, but it's worth the effort. When you're happy, don't take it for granted. Drink it in. Memorize it. Make a picture. How does it feel to be happy? Store that memory. And make it intense. And when you think about it, when you have that memory, amplify it. Give it a lot of energy. Also, it's very easy if you watch the news and get on the internet and dwell on these things to think about the world as a very bad place, that and that people are going to end up. There's a term, Weltschmerz, which means a anxiety caused by the state of the world, and many writers talked about this and wrote books about it. Hermann Hesse and many others, a lot of German writers and French wrote about it. And there's a danger of this. It's very, very easy to gather a whole lot of evidence that that the world is a scary, scary, dangerous place, and that we're all heading to hell in a handbasket. And furthermore, there's a kind of romance to it. You know, it's kind of cool to post and on Facebook and read posts about how bad things are and how everything's going to explode on us and this end of the world, and you know, read books about it and stuff. But really, what does this do for you? Here I got some notes here. Yeah, Weltschmerz. From the German meaning world pain or world weariness, a term coined by the German author Jean Paul, denotes the kind of feeling experienced by someone who understands that physical reality can never satisfy the demands of the mind. This kind of worldview was widespread among several romantic authors such as Lord Byron, Giacomo the Party, François-René de Chateaubriand, I was trying to remember Chateaubriand, Alfred de Musset, Nicolas Villeneuve, Hermann Hesse, and Heinrich Heine. It was also used to denote the feeling of anxiety caused by the ills of the world. And boy, if you want anxiety caused by the ills of the world, just spend a few days watching news channels and stuff. You know, we see this a lot. We see this a lot. But I want to tell you something about the world. It's always been this way. You can read authors from ancient Rome, and it sounds like it was written today. You can read political commentary around the time of Abraham Lincoln. It was exactly like it was today. The world does not change. The world does not change. Technology changes. People don't. People don't change. And people hate it when I say that. People hate it. Oh, yeah, people change. No, they don't. No, they don't. They really don't. People do not change. And people hate it. Oh, my God, I know someone that changed. No, you don't. You really don't. Behaviors will change. Human nature doesn't. And you really don't. And if you do make changes in your life, it's always best to kind of do it quietly, because people don't like it when you change. And when you try to make big changes, the world doesn't like it. And by the world, I mean people. And if you doubt that, look at history. Look at people who tried to change the world. They almost always got killed. People who tried to make big changes in the world almost always got killed. Whether they were good people or bad people. I'll throw out some names. Jesus Christ, Martin Luther King, John F. Kennedy, Julius Caesar, Adolf Hitler, Napoleon Bonaparte, Mussolini. I can go on and on and on. But Gandhi. Gandhi was the best man that ever lived, shot in the back of the head. Not by a Muslim, but by a fellow Hindu. And his last words were, "Oh God, you try to change the world in big ways, there are natural forces that resist change." This is what I was talking about, resistance. If you resist the world fights back. So when I talk to people about new thought, I tell you that you can change the world around you by an effort of will. Don't brag about it. Be very careful. Don't boast. Don't say, "Oh my God, I've been practicing this new thought stuff, man, this attraction, this projection, and I've been getting raises, and I've been making money and stuff." No, keep it very quiet. The techniques that we teach, don't go around talking about it. Don't say, "Yeah, I've been doing this crystal ball work, man, and I send out these positive vibes, and my life is a lot better now, man, it's a lot better." There's resistance, and there's resentment, not by you, but by everybody else. And they will stop you. Things will work against you. You got to be very, very quiet about it. I'm not talking about conspiracy theory here. I'm just talking, you know, look at the world. So happiness is very, 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 very possible. And you can have this type of happiness. I want to tell you some stuff that is not happy. One is euphoria. Be careful about euphoria. Euphoria is a temporary sense of happiness. It is a neurobiological effect caused by chemicals. And these chemicals can be either natural or external. Continuous physical exercise, especially aerobic exercise, creates what's called a natural high due to raised dopamine levels and chemicals such as adenosine, be endorphins, which, by the way, is actually described chemically as an endogenous opioid. It is an opioid. It's like opium. It's like cocaine. And there are pharmacologically induced euphoriants, which is a psychoactive drug, and they're addictive, like methamphetamines. Amphetamines, methamphetamines, cocaine, MDMA. Nicotine, by the way, is a parasympathetic stimulant that acts as a mild euphoriant in many people. Intoxicants like alcohol in moderate doses is a euphoriant. There's several stages of alcoholism. You know, there's jocose, bellicose, morose, and comatose. Opioids, of course, heroin, morphine, codeine, oxycodone. Oxycodone is terrible. People get hooked on that. Methadone. Cannabinoids such as THC and cannabis. Now, there are natural cannabinoids in humans. There are chemicals in humans known as endocannabinoids. There's one called adenamine. Is that what it is? Adenamine? And lots of things like this. There's also a rather nasty trick nature plays upon you when you fall in love. You produce these chemicals that induce euphoria for a little while, sometimes up to about 6 to 8 weeks, sometimes longer than that. And then it kind of fades away to be replaced by, hopefully, other more lasting effects. But for a while there, you produce the same chemicals in the brain that are produced when you take a hit of an opioid. There's oxytocin and adrenaline and dopamine and all sorts of stuff that's produced when you first start a relationship, and it's a really good relationship, and the sex is really good, and the other person smells good. Apparently, smell has a lot to do with it. You experience euphoria, and you think, "Man, I'm happy." No, you're not. You're in a state of euphoria. You're not happy. That's euphoria, because then it wears off. And this is why you have relationship junkies. You have people who surf relationships. They stay in a relationship for a couple months or 3 months, and then they disappear. They're in another one. They disappear. They're in another one. They disappear. They're in another one. And what happens is they rationalize, "Well, that must not be the one." that must not be the one either. That must not be the one either, because they're surfing on that high, on that euphoria. So beware of euphoria. Beware of euphoria. Then there's a thing called a sense of wonder. The sense of wonder is, you know, when you look up at the stars at night and you think about how far away they are and how there's no end to space and how many millions of planets might have life, and you get this sense of transcendence. The sense of wonder, by the way, has been attributed as the source of science fiction and fantasy. And apparently the sense of wonder appears over and over in 20th century discussions of fantasy and science fiction. And the sense of wonder has led the great comic book writer Alan Moore to say that there is an epidemic, and I actually wrote this quote down because it was very good, or did I? I may have deleted it, but anyway, Alan Moore said that today's adult's interest in superheroes is potentially culturally catastrophic. He says, to my mind, this embracing of what were unambiguously children's characters at their mid-20th century inception seems to indicate a retreat from the admittedly overwhelming complexities of modern existence. It looks to me very much like a significant section of the public having given up on attempting to understand the reality that they're actually living in, have instead reasoned that they might at least be able to comprehend the sprawling, meaningless, but at least still finite universes presented by DC or Marvel Comics. I would also observe that it is potentially culturally catastrophic to have the ephemera of a previous century squatting possessively on the cultural stage and refusing to allow this surely unprecedented era to develop a culture of its own, relevant and sufficient to its times. So what Alan Moore, who I don't know if you know who he was, he wrote The Watchmen and V is for Vendetta, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen and Swamp Thing and Hellraiser, a wonderful writer, is saying is that this retreat into fantasy, this cultural phenomena of grown adults, of men and women who are adults, getting euphoric. And have you ever seen people at science at superhero movies? People do experience euphoria as a retreat from reality. He said this is culturally catastrophic, because it shows an inability to deal with the real world. And I see quite a bit of this in sometimes people retreat into magic reality as well. Magic, I practice it. I practice root work. But I also know magic has limits. And sometimes people get really caught up in it and have real problems dealing with real problems, and they think magic can solve everything. In the time we have remaining, I would like to talk to you about some concepts about dealing with the world. One of the best ways to be happy, I think, is looking at the world realistically and realizing that there is good. And one of the things that I'd like to talk to you about is how Buddhists deal with this. If you know Buddhists and you know people who practice Buddhism, if you see Buddhist monks are very much at peace and very happy. And there are four states that are called the divine abodes, the Brahma Viharas, and these are cultivated through meditation. There's metta, which is the love, it's basically the love a mother feels for her only precious child, generalized and universalized to every living being in the universe. Then there's karuna, which is compassion. And compassion, the way Buddhists define it, is a bit different than you might expect. Then there's mudita, which is unselfish, sympathetic joy, which I'm going to go into more in a minute. And equanimity, which is basically peace of mind. It's an emotional even keel. Emotionally, you don't go too high, you don't go too low. You don't have euphoria, you don't have despair. In fact, there's a very cool verse I like in the Dhammapada. It says, like a rock unmoved by the wind and the rain, so is the sage unmoved by praise or blame. And that's equanimity. Now, mudita, which is unselfish, sympathetic joy, is very easy to explain, but it's difficult. It's very easy to feel joy when our friends and family experience a stroke of good luck. But can you feel that same joy for your worst enemy when they experience good luck? It's a lot easier to feel resentment or jealousy when your worst enemy experiences good luck, and it's even easier to feel a mean sort of happiness when your worst enemies experience misfortune. But oddly enough, there's a sense of joy when your family and friends experience misfortune. Isn't there a sense of share, this sort of companionship, this kind of joy of shared misfortune when you're brought together by shared misfortune? And this is one of the things that mudita, that sympathetic joy, examines. Why do we feel good when the people we know and care about have misfortune? Why is there this depressing fact that people are much more ready to sympathize with you when bad luck occurs? We're more ready to sympathize with the misfortunes of others than to rejoice with them. This is a psychological quirk there's a French author named Montaigne, because there's something altogether not too displeasing in the misfortunes of our friends. You got to love those French authors. So, mudita is sympathy toward mankind and faith in its potential for good and acceptance of its worthwhileness. So, the way I always explain mudita is that you find good in man in spite of all this evidence that you tend to see in the news, you know, cops shooting people. You say, well, there are also good cops. You see crooked politicians. And, I mean, let's face it, man, this presidential election is a fucking joke. It's a fucking joke. And but there's still hope. And that hope is going to make you miserable. You know, you still hope, okay, somebody's going to come and stand up and be, no, probably not. But what you do with mudita is you recognize the capacity for man's goodness. And it is there. Man can rise to the goodness of angels. We have that capacity. So we recognize the capacity for goodness, not the evidence. Because if you look at the evidence, like my grandfather said, nothing wrong with the world, it's people that mess things up. And this is what I think people, when they make the mistake, when they say things like, religion is responsible for a lot of evil. No, not really. Religion is a good thing. There's a lot of high ideals in religion. Religion sets very high standards for people. But people, especially people who want power and money and control and use it for political reasons, will mess it up every time. Especially when you get involved in pissing matches, like my Heavenly Father can kick your Heavenly Father's ass. And man, what a foolish thing to fight for. But that's exactly what most wars amount to. When it's not real estate, it's ideology. And my Heavenly Father can whip your Heavenly Father's ass. And what a silly thing to fight for. So when we're talking about mudita, sympathetic joy, we find happiness in the blessings that occur to other people. We look around us and we find reasons to be happy for other people. Not resentment at other people's fortune, and not resentment at our own misfortune. We don't say, well, why are they happy and I'm not? And I've got to tell you that I used to have a lot of that. I grew up, as some people would say, underprivileged or disadvantaged, poor. And I went to school with people who were privileged and knew it, and they treated some of us badly. When I understood why, you know, I got to know some of them. Now, some of them were not that way. You know, some of them even came from the same neighborhood. They were great people, but some of them, they thought they, the sun rose and set on them, and they let the rest of us know it. And I resented them. You know, I was young. You know, I was 16, 17, and I had this chip. You know, it was John against the world in those days, and I just raged against the world. I'm going to change it all. You know, but what I realized is, no, you can't change the world. You can't. You really can't. But man, you can find loopholes in it if you look. You can live exactly the life you want to live if you know how to stay beneath the radar. You sure can. Oh yes, you sure can. Yes, sir. And but what we have in our minds is this hope thing, so that we have this proneness to conjure up a fantasy of a previous golden age when people were heroes and life was lived in accordance to noble virtues. People say this a lot. They create a culture that never existed. They'll say, well, yeah, the ancient Greeks, and they say the ancient Asians, and they say, God help us, my people, the Native Americans. They say, oh, the Native Americans lived in harmony with the land. No, we did not. Man, you got to be kidding. Most of the Native American tribes would move. They'd go to a place, they'd trash it. They would trash it, then move on. And Native Americans were constantly at war with each other. The Cherokees and the Choctaws and the Seminoles, you know, my people were Cherokees. Man, we hated each other. And Black Hawk, the Sauk, he warred against the Cherokees, my people. And the Native Americans were as messed up as anybody. But we have this fantasy where we're always creating somebody who lived in accordance with noble virtues. But when did this exist except in somebody's mind? And the Atlanteans and the people at Mu and the and Xenu, you know, the Scientologist Xenu and these aliens that came down here. No, it never did. No. There's never been a moral age. Never. The only time you're going to find this type of virtue is when you find it within yourself and you celebrate it. So we recognize the capacity for goodness in man. We celebrate the divinity within man, even when we don't see the evidence of it, because there it is. It's there. And that's where we find our happiness. That's the only place we're going to find it, within ourselves and within each other. When we find it in ourselves, we know the truth that as I am, you are. But you got to find it in yourself. You got to find peace in yourself. You got to find the happiness in yourself, and you got to find that worthiness in yourself. Guilt is when you've done something wrong, when you've done something bad. Shame is when you are something bad. And if you feel that you're something bad, you can't fix that. If you've done something bad, you can. So you cannot be ashamed of yourself and be happy, and you can't harbor guilt and be happy. So you have to live a life free of this. You have to find that core within you that's peaceful. You have to find something within yourself from which you can't be moved, and that's where you go. When things are tough, you find a spot within you from which you can't be moved, where nobody can move you. Nothing anyone says or does is going to move you from this place in your mind of great peace. You've got to stand there, and like a rock, unmoved by the wind and the rain, you will not be moved by praise or blame. You will be firm. And I can't tell you where that spot is. I cannot tell you where that spot is. You have to find it yourself. And if you are... will. And once you find it in yourself, you'll see it in other people. You'll see that everybody, no matter how different they seem to you, has a similar spot within them. And it's an inner core. It's a thing within them that makes them worth your attention and worth your respect. But it's got to start with yourself. And once you have this, you'll have this unselfish, sympathetic joy in everything they do. You know how it is when a little kid, like you have a child or a niece or a nephew, and they take their first steps, and you feel really happy for them. You go, oh, you did such a good thing. That's mudita. That's sympathetic joy. And you cultivate this, and you project it to every living thing. And when you do this, you know you got it right. when you wake up at the when you wake up in the morning, and instead of going, oh my God, another day, oh Jesus Christ, how am I going to get through this day? You wake up in the morning, you go, hey, another day, yay, man, I can't wait, I can't wait. So that's our thought for the day. We'll see you next week, and we'll talk some more. John St. Germain.